This is a recording of the open meeting of the Federal Election Commission held on Thursday, November 13th, 2008. Should you have questions after listening to this recording, please call the FEC at 1-800-424-9530 or email us at info@fec.gov.
We're going to move to the... That's 4 o'clock now. Folks had some other scheduling obligations at 4. We were talked about moving to the Cool for Congress audit report. I'm recused. I'll turn over the gavel to the vice chair if we do that. Given that it's 4, do we want to do that now? Or do we want to?
Yes.
Do it now? Okay. I'm going to excuse myself and turn over the gavel to the. Right, you can gavel it out. I can just right.
It shows that the chairman and his assistants have left the room and will take up agenda document 0836 this time.
Chairman, could I have a moment to gather staff?
Sure. Jumping the gun on you a little bit here. I'm advised that I should make a record right now that we're going to skip over an item on the agenda. I was going to wait till later to do that, but. Missouri Democratic State Committee matter, agenda document 0836, as I understand it, we'll put that off to our next executive session, or our next meeting, and we'll go right now to Cool for Congress, which is 0835. And Mr. Peterson, do you have a motion to make?
Were you planning on giving a brief summary at the outset, or don't want to step on your,
okay.
On your intro?
He already introduced it, but I'll go ahead and you guys know me from earlier, obviously. The report of the Audit Division on the Cool for Congress Committee, 2004 Principal Campaign Committee for Congressman Randy Cool, candidate for Congress from New York's 29th District. The audit resulted in the following findings: misstatement of financial activity and receipt of prohibited in-kind contributions. Any questions? We'll talk about them.
Thank you. In this matter, it appears that most of the findings revolve around a period of time when then State Senator Randy Cool was running for state office, and he also filed with the FEC to be a federal candidate, but had not publicly announced his candidacy. And his counsel explains the reason for that is he was waiting to determine whether or not the sitting member of Congress at the time, Amo Houghton, would run for re-election or not. So for the period of approximately a year, he had filed his candidacy with the FEC, but he wasn't publicly seeking office. And the reason why that's relevant is many of the findings revolve around that time period where the candidate raised approximately $84,000 and had $12,000 of expenditures in order to raise that amount. And that $12,000 was filed with the FEC. And he, at that same time, had an office that was paid, that all the overhead expenses were paid out of the state account. And the auditors have looked at that and said, well, someone must have been sitting somewhere in order to raise that $84,000. And so because the counsel for Cool didn't give an allocation formula, instead, again, the candidate simply reported the expenditures that in their view were made for federal purposes, the auditors then came up with an allocation formula based on the amount of money that the campaign raised, and used that allocation formula to then go back and allocate the overhead expenditures for that period in time that were used for the state committee according to the campaign. So I look at the file and read all of the background and the filings and everything, and I think it's perfectly reasonable that a candidate would not necessarily have somebody who was raising that federal money in the state campaign. It's perfectly conceivable to me that, again, they only raised $84,000 and spent $12,000 doing so. It's perfectly conceivable that somebody could have done that as a volunteer. Somebody could have done that, you know, it could have been a state employee who was doing it on their own time. It could have been the congressman himself. If the point is to report the expenditures that were made by the federal campaign and then also the state campaign, in my view, the campaigns both did that. And there's nothing in the regs that they didn't follow. And I believe that in this case, the auditors have come up with something. And I understand the reasoning. We had very helpful conversations with the auditors and OGC on this matter in advance of this meeting. But I am not prepared to approve a finding today that the committee received any prohibited in-kind contributions, which is directly the finding of finding two, and that is interrelated with the audit finding number one. One other point is that following the time that the candidate announced his candidacy for federal office, almost all the expenditures for that same office were paid by the federal campaign. So that's the way that the campaign decided to run itself. Once it was clear to them they were going to become a federal candidate, they paid for all those expenditures with the federal funds. And then after he won election, they split it up according to them to the way that they spent the funds. So what I propose that we do in order to potentially solve this matter today is ask the audit staff to circulate an amended report that reflects, to the extent that the audit division has evidence that the campaign should have paid for something with federal funds, present that to us, and then in that case, I'd be more than willing to approve that kind of finding. But in the absence of a specific finding that they didn't use federal funds for an expenditure that they should have, I'm not prepared to accept today. Thank you.
Any further comments from commissioners or from the audit division? Excuse me.
I just have a couple brief comments. First of all, let me thank Mr. Faven, Ms. Lee, Ms. Painter for meeting with us at length this morning to go over this matter and discuss things, answer questions. I felt that was very productive and was very much appreciated. And I think that helped us understand and get a more full picture of what was happening here. I agree with what Commissioner Hunter had to say. I'm not comfortable with the allocation method that was used in this audit report, and to their credit, audit staff recognized that this was a kind of a tough situation, and were fully candid with us both in our meeting and in the report itself about the limitations of this method of allocation, and they were put in a bit of a difficult spot. As I read the regs and also even looking at relevant advisory opinions, the test for the proper allocation in this sort of situation appears to be a test that looks at the actual benefit that is derived by each committee. And using the method that was used in this instance, the looking at the fundraising receipts by each committee during that relevant period between March 03 and March 04, I do not believe is supported in either the law or in the regulations. And I don't even think it's very much reflective of the facts. The allocation ended up being heavily weighted towards these expenditures being paid primarily with federal funds, when the facts, as I read them, didn't seem to justify a disproportionate allocation towards federal dollars. So, having said that, I'm not able to support this finding, but I would be open to the suggestion that Commissioner Hunter presented, that we ask the audit staff to revise its report, looking at using the standard of the actual benefit derived by the federal committee versus the actual benefit derived by the state committee, providing the underlying factual support for those findings, and then recirculating that that report, and so I would support that measure as well.
Okay. Thank you, Commissioner. Are there any other comments, or would the Audit Division like to comment on that suggestion? Yes.
Well, of course, in a number of these cases, we feel that we have looked at, you know, where the documentation is sufficient to establish who was benefiting and done those allocations as best we could. The information available here is sparse with respect to a lot of this activity during this period of time. For those that we couldn't, we did choose what we felt was the only available allocator, which may not be the perfect one, but the only one that that was available, and that being the money they were raising. Given the fact that you know, it was the year before the election for the most part, fundraising seemed to be what they were doing most of, other than the overhead expenses, and because of that, it also helps with using relative fundraising a little for the expenses that they were incurring during that period of time. We can, if the commission wants, be more specific or more detailed in this analysis. That we can certainly do. But you know, we feel that the information presented, the recommendation presented, is a fair resolution to the problem. And I understand that during that year, Congressman Kuhl hadn't publicly announced his candidacy, but that's really not under FECA. That's not the test. He had filed a statement of candidacy. He had raised 80 some odd thousand dollars and spent 12 of that out of a federal committee. So I think he was a candidate at that point. It is also entirely possible that while there was paid staff and campaign headquarters for the non-federal, that the federal was somehow run by a volunteer and there were no expenses associated with it. Doesn't seem particularly likely to us, and it's nothing that the committee has proffered as the explanation. And so we presumed, since they appear to be running out of the same office, that there should be a sharing of the overhead expenses that go with it, as well as some of the other expenses of the campaign, some of the polling and that sort of thing that was going on.
Commissioner Weintraub.
Thank you, Mr. Vice Chairman. Just a couple of questions. You said the records were sparse.
We obviously had information on the payments the federal account made, and we had the state committee's reports. And Erica can fill in better than I on the details of that.
Were there records that they were supposed to be maintaining that they weren't, or did they say there was just nothing to maintain records about?
Well, since the state paid these expenses, these would have been state records. So we asked for records to support the payments that were made 100% by the state. Mm-hmm. We asked for documentation to support those. For some, they were able to supply them and were able to make the appropriate adjustments. But for those that they could not, we used the funds received method during that 2000 to 2004 period.
And with respect to the money that they raised, I mean, it seems like what I'm hearing is they raised, what, $84,000 during this period of time when they were sort of trying to operate a little bit below the radar screen, so as, you know, perhaps not to alienate Congressman Houghton before he made his decision as to whether he's going to run again. And you're assuming that he was raising that money operating out of this state office because he didn't have a federal office. But it seems like this is a factual question that could be resolved. Did we ask him, how'd you raise the money?
Well, yes, we did talk to them about it. And we didn't really get much in documentation to support any answer for that.
Oral explanation, anything? I mean, how It seems like this is a question that would be easy to answer. You know, how did you raise this money?
They did pay a fundraising firm, $12,000. That's what the $12,000 was paid for.
And they say that was the entire explanation for the
basically
all of the money
amount
was raised by the fundraising firm.
The money they paid to the fundraising firm was the money spent on behalf of raising those contributions.
And like you say, they were waiting for the congressman to decide whether he was going to run again. And he was kind of in, you know, waiting for that decision for almost a year.
So he didn't have an official campaign office? He wasn't advertising a phone number or anything like that?
Correct.
Okay, well, I mean, personally, I don't have a problem with the audit report as is. Obviously, if there aren't four votes to adopt this audit report, then we can send it back and see if we can get an audit report that there will be four votes for. That's okay.
Any other comment? From my own view, I am with Commissioner Weintraub on this, but I have no problem with the methodology used, but I can count. So I think certainly this may be a way to find a way to get to a different result. But I'm wondering, when you were looking at all the state expenditures, as I understand it, did you just call out the ones that you couldn't identify and then apply the ratio to it? Is that how it worked? Or did you add the unidentified ones in a ratio with the others, and did that change the ultimate proration?
The ones we didn't have documentation.
We went to the state reports first, and from the state reports, we determined which expenditures we viewed might be shared expenditures. We then asked the committee to submit documentation. We gave them a schedule. And they were able to submit documentation for some of the expenditures, and for those they did, we made the appropriate adjustments, whether it was, you know, letting it be, adjusting it back to 100% state or allocating it based on the documentation between state and federal. For those that we did not have any documentation for, depending on when the expenditure was made, if it was made between 2003 and the first quarter of 2004, we used the funds received method. If it was made after the election, depending on the expenditure, we used their allocation with employees. They had allocated a couple of their employees on in November reports. So we used what their allocator after the election, and then on other expenditures, we viewed 100% after the reports, based on the expenditure.
I'm not fully clear on exactly when you implemented the various different approaches, but out of curiosity, of the expenditures, what percent were not identified or were not documented? Now, I gather that there's a difference between not documented and ones that, from what you know, you suspect to be shared expenses. Just because they were documented, do you presume they were shared?
If the documentation indicated that they were shared, then we allocated it based on that documentation. If the documentation indicated it was 100% federal, there was certain expenditures that we originally, 100% state, then we adjusted it back to 100% mm-hmm. state. If we did not have documentation for expenditures, then we either did it on the funds received method for the beginning, the 2003 through 2004, or we did it on their method, on their allocation method after the election, or we did it based on some expenditures we viewed 100% after the election based on the expenditure.
Commissioner Hatter.
I think, Mr. Vice Chair, your line of questioning brings up something that we talked about earlier this morning, which is one of the concerns for us on this issue is the burden of proof. And it seems as if when the campaign said, well, that was purely a state expense, we didn't take them at their word, and we said, oh, but it doesn't seem like it was, and if you can't prove that the people in the state office were in fact doing activities for your state reelection, he was up for state reelection, then we imposed this formula. And so that's a whole nother issue, which I think is very important, but in my view, we shouldn't shift the burden onto the candidate when we're just not happy with the answer that it was a state expenditure.
Further comment? Yes, Commissioner Weintraub.
I'd just like to ask counsel to comment on the burden of proof issue, if you could.
Traditionally, we viewed the burden of proof in, or the burden, I probably more accurately said burden of production in an audit context, as being different from the burden of production and the burden of proof in an enforcement context. In an enforcement matter, we, the government, are saying that somebody violated, if we're going all the way with it, somebody violated the law to the point where they should pay a penalty. And it's, we've always viewed the statute as requiring us to prove to a standard of probable cause in the enforcement context. That the violation was committed. In the audit context, where although referrals are in some cases possible, it's kind of a different kettle of fish. We are merely trying to determine, pursuant to our audit program under 438B, trying to verify the committee's compliance and the committee's reports. And as with anybody who's audited by the IRS or an IG or whomever, in any sort of audit situation, auditors will come in and say, okay, document to us, give us the records by which you can document that you have complied with the law. And if they can give us records that say that provide that documentation and permit us to verify their compliance and verify the statements that they have made in their reports, that's fine. And if they can't provide that documentation, then what do we do? And you really have, it seems to me, I think about two choices there. You can either say, well, for purposes of the audit, we're going to say that the burden of production of documents.
You pulled their state reports and started fishing through their state reports and said, are you sure that was really a state expenditure? So it's not really, I don't think what you said directly fits toward that. Talking about the federal reports, I guess we looked through them and said, gee, there's no office expenses here. How could you raise 84 grand without an office? So instead, I guess my point is, we didn't look at one of the expenditures on here and say, well, that's really inappropriate, or looks like you know, spent money where it wasn't appropriate. We instead looked and said, wow, you don't have an office.
Well, with respect to the record-keeping requirement, I just say that in 104.14, there's a requirement that you keep sufficient records by which we can verify the statements that you make or, by extension, omit from your reports. And in 109.2, there's a requirement that you keep sufficient records of contributions to or disbursements by your committee. One of the things, and the auditors can talk to, can speak to this better than I can, but at some point, if a committee, and I know this is the case in requests for additional information, if a committee shows no overhead expenses whatsoever, we'll ask the committee, well, where are your overhead expenses? And again, you all can talk to this better than I can in this particular instance, but I think they've had a fairly ample opportunity to answer that question and really haven't.
Just to be clear, the record keeping requirements that you cited to, those are for federal committees, right? We don't have jurisdiction over state committees.
They are for federal committees. On the other hand, there is a prohibition on the authorized committee, where a candidate has a state committee and a federal committee, there is a regulatory prohibition on the state committee providing financial support to the federal committee. So if there's a question raised as to whether, in fact, the state committee did provide financial support to the federal committee, but the reports don't show, and the reports raise that question but don't resolve the issue, then it seems to me appropriate in an audit to ask for the information and for the records that would resolve that issue.
Is there any further comment on any end? Yes, ma'am.
I just wanted to say that on audits, auditors often go to whatever information is necessary to help to verify the accuracy of the reports. And it's not always because we're trying to, sometimes what we find doesn't necessarily prove that there's a violation. It also proves that there's not one, too. And so going to state records if they're available or to state reports that are on public disclosure is something that we routinely do.
I would just say that I have no problem with referencing state records, but it does concern me when we draw a negative inference if state records, which are not required to be maintained under federal regulation because they're outside of our jurisdiction, if the fact that they can't produce those, that we draw a negative inference saying, well, then that must have been, unless you can prove some sort of prove otherwise, we're going to assume that those were funds that either needed to be paid with all federal dollars or at least an allocated portion. That's one of the issues, and that's something that we discussed at length in our meeting today. So that's something I think going forward is something we may also want to consider.
Okay, anything further? If not, then is there a motion?
I would move that we instruct, well, let me just, I guess first of all, inquire with counsel about making sure that, I'm presuming that if I just make a motion to instruct audit staff to revise the report consistent with the discussion at the table to apply an actual benefit-derived test as opposed to using this allocation. Is there anything more or less specific that I need to relate than that?
Well, I defer that question to Mr. Stoltz and Mr. Thomas as to whether they could actually make it happen or not.
I gather then what the motion is, it would be to include in expenses benefiting the federal committee paid by the non-federal, only those for which we have some documentation that shows, and that the commission would disapprove an allocation of expenses where the proper allocation, if any, can't be determined from the available records.
See if I correct for me, I didn't interpret the motion to be that way. I think, as I understood it, the motion would be to go back and come back to us with that information, and we can debate the issue later as to how we want to allocate that. I would want to agree, particularly today, that we'll be bound by that. That I'm interested in to know that, but to help resolve this. But I understand it to mean that we'll automatically accept that as the final decision that we couldn't consider a modification of that or something along that line.
I think Mr. Stoltz accurately reflects what we were thinking, but that it would come around in a tally vote. Is that?
Well, it would, but that would also mean that we have a decision that we're not going to do an allocation in this case.
Right. Yeah.
And again, going back to some of the things we just did with the Edwards report, the way that would normally be done is the allocation presented, and then there would be an explanation that the commission determined that the certain, particularly overhead, because that's where most of it is, would not require an allocation in this situation.
Mr. Weintraub.
Thank you, Mr. Vice Chairman. I was under the impression walking in here that we were just going to send this back to audit to see if they could come up with more documentation that you would find more satisfactory. I was not under the impression that we were making any legal conclusions here today as to what the appropriate standard would be, because the ratio according to the benefit reasonably expected to be derived is a long-standing principle in FEC world and in FEC law and regulations, and I'm not aware of a regulation that says that you can only allocate based on actual benefit. That what it sounds like you're going to a place that I'm not aware of there being support in the regulations for. It's like a higher threshold than we have used in the past, and that we have in our regulations. So I'm not comfortable voting here to say, oh yeah, I support that. What I'm prepared to support is sending it back to audit to see if they can come up with more data or something that would, you know, that it would ultimately come back for another vote, and maybe the legal determination would be met there. But, you know, if we were going to be asked to make a, you know, a change in our legal standard here at the table, I wouldn't want to do that without some further thought on that. I'm not prepared to do that right now.
I don't know that I characterize it as a change in our legal theory, although I'm not sure, because I just don't have enough of a frame of reference to know whether this would be a major departure or not. But I think in this case, what we're trying to say is, and I think Joe said it best so far, is that, or Mr. Stoltz, sorry.
I can call you Joe?
Okay. Just plain Joe. Joe the auditor.
Is that we don't think that it's appropriate to have an allocation formula in this case at all. In this case. Now, of course, there's regs on the books, and there's other circumstances where it is appropriate. But in this case, there is no reg on point. And as mentioned by Commissioner Peterson and in the actual document, the audit came up with this allocation formula, and by their own admission, it maybe wasn't as clean as it could have been, but in their view, it was the best way to move forward. So I don't think it's fair to say that this is required by the regulations, and I think they even acknowledge that, and please correct me if I'm misstating that. But so I think our view is send this back and don't characterize any of these expenses as prohibited in-kind contributions. Furthermore, don't use the allocation formula in this case. But to the extent that we have evidence that the federal committee benefited in any way by the state expenditure, show us that evidence, and we're perfectly willing to say you should not have done that, and you should reimburse the state, the federal campaign for that, or you know, the state, you should pay that back. So it may be a completely different view of this, but it goes back to saying only to the extent that we can show that the federal campaign inappropriately benefited by expenditures from the state campaign, will we then say there has to be a transfer of funds?
And my concern is that I hear what you say. I mean, I think that this is complicated by the fact that the records that we would ideally want that would establish, you know, to everyone's satisfaction, what was done here are, to the extent they exist, they would probably be within the control of the state committee. And normally we would, and as Commissioner Peterson accurately pointed out, you know, the state committee doesn't have a record-keeping requirement that we have jurisdiction to enforce. So it puts us in an awkward situation, because there's no way that, I mean, the whole purpose of an audit is to go look at their records, and they need to produce those records. We don't have the records. There's no way for our auditors to establish something without the records that are supplied by the candidate that we're auditing. And if they don't come up with the records, then we're sort of, we've got nothing to go on. So if we say, well, you know, if the candidate doesn't come up with the records, then, you know, we're just out of luck. That kind of leaves us in I hear what you're talking about with the, you know, with the fact that we don't have jurisdiction to make them keep certain state records, but it also leaves us in kind of an uncomfortable place, because as I think Larry was trying to point out, you can be Larry the lawyer, as opposed to Joe the auditor, we are, you know, this isn't an enforcement action, it's an audit, and the whole purpose of an audit is to look at their records. And you know, it's not a fishing expedition, it's what an audit is to look through their records. If they don't have records, then it makes it impossible for us to draw any conclusions at all.
But you just said what I was trying to say. If they don't have records, it makes it impossible for us to draw conclusions. So if we don't have records, we don't have records.
If I could just, you know, I think the issue you're talking about is one that we actually talked about in our meeting today, is what happens in a case like this where we have a, you know, a committee that says, you know, we ask, okay, we don't think that you allocated appropriately, and they come back and said, No. The activities and expenditures which benefited the state committee were paid with state dollars, and vice versa, those that benefited the federal committee were paid with federal dollars. And that's in the reports, and there's your answer. And when we come back and say, well, we're still not comfortable with that, we don't necessarily have a lot of documentation to prove that. But I mean, what happens in that standoff? I mean, where do the presumptions lie in that case? And it appears that the presumption in this case was, well, we presume that there was something, that there was federal activity that needed to be either paid with all hard dollars, or at least with an allocated, allocation between federal and state dollars. And, but what is our basis for that presumption? We have a state committee here that they didn't have a record-keeping requirement, and we're kind of asking them to prove a negative now, and produce those, or we're going to assume that was either federal, all federal, or at least that there should have been an allocation. And then the allocation formula we come up here in this instance, which I believe was around 75% to 80% of those expenditures, which what were considered shared expenditures, we kind of did a 80-20 federal state split. And I just the evidence that I see presented in the audit report, I just, to me, does not seem to reflect that was justified, or I there's no basis for me to conclude that allocation reflected the reality of the situation. So
how about an affidavit? I mean, it seems to me that maybe we could get an affidavit from somebody who was from either the candidate or from somebody who was working in his state office saying no federal work was done here during this time period. We were exclusively operating, exclusively functioning on the benefit of a state campaign. And I mean, that would be probative. Do we ever explore options like that when they don't have records?
People do occasionally give us affidavits when we ask questions. That we didn't specifically ask for one in this case, but none was proffered. One of the things that they have to sort of look at with this, in the way it switched from being in their view, one day it was 100% state operation, the next day it was 100% federal operation. Probably didn't happen that quickly. Obviously the standard is benefit reasonably expected to be derived. There's no, that's the rule. That's what we have to look at. And in some cases, based on what we were looking at in documentation, you could say, well, it's okay, this is the way this one should be done. In other cases, and it's particularly with salaries and overhead operations, there's nothing other than the fact that we know that there were salaries and there were overhead, and there was a phone bill and internet access and whatever else went with it. And that both campaigns were running. And so we were looking for a benefit reasonably expected to be derived. Now, obviously, it would be really great if we had time records for people, or we had square footage records of who was occupying what in the office. Not there, and not surprised that that's not there. And it's just not something that we'd have been shocked had we run into that sort of information. So then we were looking for a substitute for those kind of records that would have been the ideal, and the only one we could find was this fundraising. So that's what we did. I guess the question then becomes, if there are no records to support any of this, do we then just walk away and say, well, since there's no records, there can be no finding? I think that is somewhat dangerous, because the failure to keep records then makes you finding proof, and I think this is not where we want to be.
I would like to also add that the funds received method, that only accounts for about 40,000 of the 84,000. The other 44,000 were either 100%, or they were based on an allocation that the committee used after the election.
But the committee didn't use that.
They didn't use it for something else. They used it on payroll, and we applied that payroll allocation to overhead, which they had originally put the overhead after the election. It went back to being paid by the state.
And that was a point in time, of course, when there was no longer a state campaign, and he had been elected to the Congress. So going back to saying that the overhead is now all state campaign again didn't seem reasonable.
Once he was elected to Congress, there were still some expenditures for both the state and the federal.
Right, and that's why we use their allocation to allow for some state
trying to recognize that, you know, there was probably some wrap-up activities involved with both.
Well, let's see. Do we have any motion? Just for myself, I would be willing to support a motion to go back and come back with some information that would give us more intelligent debate, but I'm not ready to vote that we would adopt that formula based upon exactly what comes back, because I still think there's, I'd like to look a little more at some past history of what we've done, and before I'd move off the theory that we've been using. But I'm open to debate on it, but I'm not ready to do that today. So personally, in my view. Mr. Weintraub, any others?
Just sure. one final comment. To address a concern that was raised earlier by Commissioner Weintraub, I don't view this as changing the standard. The standard, I believe it remains the same. Looking at the Schumer AO, there's language talking about how an allocation between when you have both state and federal campaigns sharing personnel and office space, that says it allocated on a number of bases reasonably reflecting the benefit derived. And the way I viewed this was that we should return this to audit to come back with us and show us what were the benefits derived by the state committee and what were the actual benefits derived by the federal committee, so that we can at least have a hard basis for making that determination. What I'm uncomfortable with is the formula that was used in this matter was actually rejected in Schumer. This fundraising allocation, just because, as the advisory opinion put it, there's a lot more going on here in fundraising. A ratio that makes sense in fundraising doesn't necessarily make sense in other contexts. And again, I realize kind of the quandary we were in this case, but I just personally couldn't sign off on a finding that I just have no confidence actually reflects what was the reality of what the actual benefits were to each of the two committees. And that's why I would recommend that we instruct the audit staff to go back and make a determination as to what the actual benefits were derived by each of the committees based on what, whatever documentation we have.
Then do I read the motion to be that only? Because I read Commissioner Heiner had a little different spin on that, and I didn't mean it in a negative way, but that's the way I interpreted it, not to be exactly the same.
Well, I think, yeah, I think we're saying the same thing.
We've
I'm just trying
here.
To be clear that I think it will end up with a very different result, and I did tell you that earlier. I don't pretend to say that doing what Commissioner Peterson just suggested is going to be a minor change. That will completely change the audit report. So I said that earlier. That's my view of the way it should be, and I think we've explained our position. I'm not sure if you're saying, Mr. Vice Chair, that you don't want to support that now, or you want to think about it, or you never will support it.
Well, I think, I'd like to go back to look at Schumer and some of those. If there's different types of approaches we can take, then certainly we can look at different types of approaches. But I don't think there's enough evidence today, from my perspective, to jump on one. And that's why I would be open to having information come back, but not be bound by the characterization that automatically. I don't want to have some discussion on, okay, in this particular case, is this one that we can look at or not. So, I'm speaking out of ignorance right now. We don't know what we're going to get. I know what you think, probably right, but I'd like to see what it is.
Is your primary concern that you don't want to pre-commit yourself to saying whatever they come back with, we've already agreed in advance that we're going to accept that?
Right.
I would share the same sentiment.
Yeah, me too.
If I could be clear, I think I understand you're saying you don't, your approach would be not to use an allocation at all in this case. And I think that, that concerns me. I think that, just for the record, I was fine with, I voted to approve this, this report. But it, we have, we use allocations in many, many situations. And I think that in this case, when you've got two committees ongoing, that some allocation has to be possible because there are things going on. Now, in this case, if he was trying to, sort of weighed out the incumbent, that makes sense that he wouldn't have been doing anything but fundraising. And that to me actually seems why the fundraising allocation made some sense. If that's all he was doing, then that was the benefit being derived and expected to be derived from the activities. If the only activities were fundraising, it seems to me that allocation made some sense. But I'm not prepared to send this back and say not use, you know, to ignore all of our allocations. If we want to ask audit to prepare, you suggest some alternative allocation formulas or some alternative rationales, you know, I might be willing to look at other reports going forward, but I'm not willing to ask them, I'm not willing to vote for something that says send it back, only count the activity that you actually have paper documentation for, because I just don't think that's, I mean, that to me is changing the standard.
Let me
try this. And by the way, I'm not completely unsympathetic to, you know, what you're seeing here. You know, I think it's, what my frustration is mostly that, you know, we're arguing about something that I'm convinced it is possible to determine the facts of, and we don't seem to have those facts. And that's just, you know, so we're arguing about what we should assume about the fact that we don't, the facts that we don't know, and that I think probably are somehow ascertainable, even if we don't have those facts before us right now. But I think the concern on our side is that we don't, we want to be clear that whatever we're doing here, we are not adopting a new legal standard. So, I mean, maybe one way of doing this would be to have a formal vote on what's in front of us. That will fail, you know, to approve the audit report, and that will fail. And then we could have a vote to send it back to audit to develop a fuller factual record and to explore alternative methods of determining, trying to figure out how to say this without using the word allocation.
Don't use the word, right.
of determining where the cost should lie with the state committee or with the federal committee, see what other facts can be developed. And then we'll reconsider it after we get that back without saying anything about what the legal standard is. Just we're sending them back for more facts, more theories if they've got them, whatever they can come up with.
That would be my, that would be one that I would support too, because until we have more facts, I think it's premature to ask us to jump on any particular other alternative approach. But I'm not sure if we're there yet, so.
I certainly appreciate, I think that's a constructive suggestion, and I appreciate the spirit in which it's offered. I realize we've already kept you over by almost an hour, Mr. Vice Chairman, but could we maybe just talk about this for maybe just like 5 minutes just to make sure. Sometimes when I'm thinking out loud on the dais, I might say or do something that
may come back to a
regretful, but if we could do that, I'd appreciate that.
Sure, we're adjourned for 5 minutes.
Recess,
thank you. It's longest 5 minutes I've ever seen. I think it's probably time to get started again. See where we are. We're going to resume the session, and Commissioner Peterson, do you have some thoughts on how to refine our discussions into something we can all agree on?
I have some thoughts, and I appreciate the informal dialogue that we had here, and for that extended 5 minutes that that you
FEC five.
That's right. It's different than a normal.
It's like a New York minute.
I would be comfortable instructing the audit staff to go back and to revise the report, kind of consistent with the discussion we've had here at the table, to come back. I mean, we've heard concerns about. You know, documentation to come back and show us for which expenses can you show that there was actual benefit derived, and we have documentation, whether derived by the federal committee or the state committee, which expenditures are, or is there a presumption being built in, just so that we can have a better idea of exactly for which expenditures do we have hard proof? Do we have some sort of documentation? And which are we just guessing because we think that there might be a problem there? Those are some of the instructions that I would hope to
I could support that. And thank you, Mr. Weintraub.
Two things. One, I would like to make a motion, which I know will fail, to approve the audit report as is. Two, is there, and I'm asking both Joe and Larry this one, is there any reason we could not go back to the committee and ask them if, you know, just, you know, be frank with them, say, you know, there's concern, you know, we're not sure what to do with this issue. Is it possible that you could allay the concerns of the commission by providing us with a one-sentence affidavit from somebody who is in a position to know that this office was only used for state purposes and no federal activity took place there? I mean, that really would, one sentence would solve the whole thing for me.
Yes, ma'am.
When you're talking about an affidavit, would you just be talking about that period from 2003 to 2004? Because we are also allocating after the election.
Is there an agreement on that allocation? That particular, I get the impression there was, but is that not so? No. There's not. Okay. So
whatever period is in dispute.
Right.
Is there any reason we can't do that?
No legal reason we can't do that.
You know, and I want to be clear, I'm not asking to, you know, send people back to go rooting around through their records again. I'm not asking for anybody here to go anywhere, just to ask them if they can produce a very brief affidavit that would allay the commission's, some commissioner's concerns.
Then the motion, if I understand it, would be that we will have a motion to, first of all, there'll be a motion to accept the recommendations.
You know, I don't have a full appreciation, excuse me, of how this all works. So I don't want to, when I say I can't support that, it's not because it's not a good idea, it's not because that would be helpful information, but we're here at the final stage. This has been going on for a long time. I don't know why that wasn't already done. I don't know specifically if the question was asked. I do know that federal report was filed, I think it's under penalty of perjury and you have to swear it, right? So, I mean, would they have filed with the federal government and the state government their reports? And I don't know that it makes a whole lot of sense to go back and get any additional information at this point.
Well, nobody raised a concern about this before, which is why it was not addressed earlier. You've raised a concern. I think it's a valid concern, and I'm just asking if we can go back and see if they can do something very, very simple to allay the concern.
But I understand that if the answer is no, we can't, then we'll go ahead with this process. And I think, and maybe you don't want an inquiry. That I don't know. I would suggest that we just send it back to audit, and they'll be communicating, I suppose, to some degree, and say, the commissioners are interested to know if there's an affidavit that could be offered that can resolve it. If not, we're going to and actually you don't have to go back because you're not going to look at any records unless you can't understand what's on a receipt, I suppose. But as I understand it, we're not going to go looking for new documents. We're going to look only at the documents that we've been relying on already and have. So, Commissioner, would you like to see if you want to embellish that approach? I mean, I guess we would restate the motion, but I didn't mean to cut you off.
Restate the approach you just discussed?
Yes. I mean, I think I understand what the concerns are, but I don't know if we are capturing your agreement.
Okay. I think the way I would structure the motion is that is what we did earlier, and I don't know that that would get four votes needed to move forward. And that was to instruct the audit staff to go back and only report back to us the benefit derived, am I saying it the right way? The benefit derived for the expenditures that we have evidence to show should have been paid for with all or in part federal funds.
I mean, and that's what it's always been for us, and apparently, I'm not sure if we're going to get support for that. If not, maybe we just vote 3-2 and call it a day.
Can I just ask you why, what your objection is to asking, just going back and asking one simple question that would clarify the whole issue?
I'd like to point out that in the recommendation in the interim audit report, we did pretty much ask for that. We had a very elaborate recommendation asking for any information about who did what for the state versus federal. So it's not like we didn't try to get them, and the affidavits would have been fine, but they basically gave us legal arguments and a little bit of documentation. So, I mean, it's been asked.
Well, I'm willing to, you know, in the audit context, people probably assume that what we're looking for is some record of, you know, like phone bills and, you know, the kind of records that auditors usually look at. Auditors don't usually look at affidavits; they usually look at other kinds of records. So I'm willing to, I believe you that you asked something that might have elicited that, if you know, but, you know, perhaps if we ask them more directly, we might be able to get a simple piece of paper that would just make the whole problem go away. Because I don't necessarily disagree with you that, you know, maybe they did use it all for state purposes. I can conceive of a circumstance where they really wouldn't have any federal office. But I just can't tell from what we know now. I'm not willing to make that assumption that. And of course, people file reports with us all the time, but if we were just going to say, well, it must be right because they already filed a report with us, then we would never do any audits at all.
I would like to add that the committee did submit one affidavit. They had submitted an affidavit for one of the employees that was after the election. So they had submitted an affidavit to us.
And what did that affidavit say?
If I recall, it basically said that she volunteered after the election. This is someone who had been federal the whole time, then became state.
And
we did not accept that affidavit. In the audit.
We did not accept it?
No.
What does that mean?
There were other factors that contributed to showing that she had participated federally, and so we did not accept her affidavit that she had only volunteered after she had been completely 100% federal.
I guess I'm not really sure I understand what you're saying.
Well, the point was is you didn't believe the affidavit.
Well, can I just ask a follow-up? So she was being paid after the election.
She was being paid by the state.
She was being paid a salary.
By the state.
Okay, and
she said she volunteered.
She said she was doing volunteer work for the federal campaign at the same time.
Right.
And your assessment was because she had been paid federally up until the date of the election, she must have still been she must have been still doing the federal work as a salaried employee rather than a volunteer.
We did have two different approaches here. I mean, one of which, if you ask for an affidavit, you then, to some degree, end up shifting the burden of proof, and I'm not too sure that's where we're going to find a final agreement here. But
it's not a burden of proof, it's a burden of production.
Well, if the question is, have you provided us all the records you have available, that's one thing. But if you ask them to say, regardless of the records that are available and we can't produce, and here's the way I interpret them, that it's a little bit different. What I understand is that we're going to look at what we have if nobody's going to be willing to sign an affidavit and see, because I guess what statements we already have under oath, and see where they will take us. And we haven't decided to agree. We're not agreeing on where they'll take us until we have more detail. Joe,
as far as the affidavit go, I would be very surprised if they wouldn't provide such an affidavit, because it would be consistent with the way they reported things and what they've been arguing all along. I don't know that we know any more then than we know now, but
would we accept it?
I'm sure that they would be willing. I'm sure, you know, if the commission wants it, I'm sure they would do it. I'm just not certain that it adds much to to what we already know, because I mean, the committee's been arguing all along that,
that's a great point.
You know, up through this date it was all state, and then from this state to this state, it was all federal, and then from this state to this state, it was something else.
But lawyers' arguments and affidavits have different weights, you know. And as I mean, from my perspective, you know, I've seen a lot of lawyers who can spin a lot of theories about what might have been and could have happened, and I know very well that there's a difference, and the lawyers who are out there know very well that there's a difference between a lawyer's argument and something that you back up with an affidavit. And if you can back it up with an affidavit, you know it's going to carry more weight. And if you think that they would be willing to supply an affidavit saying, I mean, because it seems to me that what we're arguing about is overhead. You know, did they have, was some of this overhead that they paid out of the state campaign, should it have been allocated to the federal? And if they are willing to supply us with an affidavit that says, we didn't do any federal work in this office from this date to that date, I'm done. You know, that satisfies me. My problem is that right now we don't have, we've got an absence of records, and we're arguing about, well, what does that mean? You know, who has the burden, and what presumption should we determine from that? That would be probative. Joe seems to think we can get it.
But I also just heard that may not change the equation for the audit staff.
Changes it for me. I get a vote.
And I also think that there's a difference when there's contradictory evidence. And here, there, as Commissioner Weintraub pointed out, there's an absence. There's clearly some federal activity going on. There was a poll, there was fundraising, there was federal activity going on. It doesn't necessarily have to have taken place in that office with respect to overhead. When you've got contradictory evidence that an affidavit, you know, can't stand up against, that's one thing. But here, there isn't any.
But that makes my point, is how do we ever come up with this finding if there's no evidence that there was any federal activity going on?
When there's federal activity going on, we have a reg that says you have to look at the benefit derived, and there's an ongoing federal campaign. There has to, and it's raising money, and it has a poll in the field, and there's all kinds of things that are being.
But there's no evidence that there was any benefit derived from by virtue of running that state office.
Right. We know there was federal activity. We just
right.
don't know where it was.
We don't know that anything was run out of the state office. We don't have any evidence of that.
Well, we don't have any evidence of where else it was either. We have an absence of evidence. Therefore, if we got a one-sentence affidavit, we would have some evidence that leaned one way, and we would have nothing contradicting it. And I guarantee you, I promise you, I commit to you, that if we get that affidavit, I will be there with you, you know, in terms of voting to say, fine, no allocation required. Good deal.
May I ask one
question? I should
question?
Be quiet while I can, huh?
May I
yes,
ask one question?
Right.
Please, I'm looking for a fact. I think this is the case, that when he filed his federal candidacy with the FEC, he used the same office address as his state campaign. Is that correct?
They're not the same addresses on the state reports as they are on the federal reports, but the rent, the address on the federal report is the address that was paid, the state report paid rent to. And I have documentation that the original, I wasn't the original auditor on this case. And I talked with the original auditor, and he said he had spoken, I assume he had spoken with the committee, because he had stated that the federal and the state campaigns were run from the same office space. But they don't have the same addresses on the state report as well as the federal report.
But they were run from the same.
They were
our information. Their filing address wasn't the same.
Correct. The address on the state reports appears to be the address of one of the employees, the treasurer.
And what was the basis for his belief that they were operating out of the same place?
I believe he asked them. The auditor did.
Yeah, Gary asked them, and they said they ran it out of the same office space, both offices, both campaigns.
He asked the committee.
Well, that sort of changes things.
Well, I'm not exactly sure where we were. I thought we had an understanding that we take our documents and go back. I think the idea of an affidavit could be problematic because we don't know what it's going to say, To me, the best evidence in most cases is documentation, and if we begin to substitute that for affidavits, we've got to be prepared for the consequences of that.
All the time.
Sometimes we do that, but I'm not convinced that in a case like this where we have documents that are out there going both ways, that we just say, well, we'll ignore them. And you tell me, and one of the issues that comes up is that at what point can you insist that somebody give you an affidavit?
We're not insisting, we're just asking.
Well, I know, but if they don't, then where are we? Because we're...
Well, then we'll be back where we are. You know, there's one alternative is they provide us with the affidavit and, you know, we're great. We've resolved the entire thing. The other alternative is they don't provide us with the affidavit and then, you know, we're no worse off than we are now. We're basically back in the same place. How about if I do this, because I know what the result of this one will be. How about if I get out of the way the motion to, you know, approve the audit report as is? I know it'll fail, but let's just, you know, that we'll have our votes on the record and we'll just get that one out of the way.
Do I hear a motion?
Mr. Vice Chairman, I move that we approve the report of the Audit Division on the Cool for Congress Committee, AO5-15, as set forth in agenda document 08-35.
Okay, we have such a motion. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
All right, now where
Darn.
Are we?
Darn.
Yeah. Do you want to take a shot at it?
I suppose I could move to instruct the staff to revise a report consistent with the discussion at the table and divine what you think that means. I think that would be, we could come.
That's fine.
When we talked about the projected range in sampling, I can only imagine what the projected range of interpretations of what we've said at this table might be. That could be a little dangerous, but.
I hope nobody ever has to review this transcript.
I would be willing to move that we instruct audit staff to revise the final audit report consistent with what we've said here at the table, where we've requested that the
maybe you should just stop there.
Okay, I probably should. But in terms of, the matter that Commissioner Hunter and I are most concerned about is having documentation of actual benefit derived by each of the committees and what proof we have for that. And that's an element that we would very much want to see in a final report. And I will let Caroline modify the motion to any extent that she wishes to.
Let's see how that goes.
Well, I'll support that myself.
Let me just, trying to get to yes with you, I really am. Okay.
Can I just add one point, just to address a concern that the Vice Chairman has raised, that we aren't pre-committing ourselves to what that report would look like, that when it comes back to us, we aren't saying now that we'll approve whatever we see, but we're instructing them to bring that back to us, at which point we'll then consider it.
And we're not instructing them to go out and do further investigations.
Just get a more detailed submission.
Could we modify that so that that's not the exclusive subject matter of whatever they bring back to us? Because originally I heard you say that in an earlier iteration you were talking about bringing back the documentation for the actual benefit as well as backup for any presumptions that they were making and how much was presumed and how much was actual. And it was it sounded like we were gathering a broader range of information. We're not doing that anymore.
My only thought is, suppose there is something that, it's not a check, but it's a memo that suggests something like, it may not be exact expenditure, but suggests like we need more room in here now for the campaign or something, where you see that there's some sharing going on at the same time. I'm just throwing something out. I saw a negative shake of the head, but it seemed to me that'd be probative.
Well, in cases where there's some sort of document, I would not consider that necessarily contradictory to my motion, because in that case, that would be documentation, and that would be some basis for arriving at a conclusion of actual benefit, and so right. So yeah, I'm what I'd like to see is, you know, what documentation do we have, and you know, what backing can we provide in a revised report to show what we're what were the expenditures that, where we can show that there was an actual benefit derived.
Does Otto understand this?
I should modify it to say that Otto is not only permitted, but encouraged to follow up with any questions along the way.
Mr. Stoltz, how do you feel about that approach? Can you, are you get enough guidance from that?
What we can do is go back and provide the commission, I guess, a lot more detail to look at. And
see where it takes us.
Yeah, see where it takes you.
Of course. Commissioner Bowerly.
Thank you. I'd be happy to vote for a motion as Mr. Stoltz just outlined. I can't support something that just says come back with the result that of the actual expenses, because I think that approach of only looking at that set of information as opposed to saying bring us back with more detail so we can assess what things may have been in your approach actual benefit, and then looking also at things that were allocated and to see if we think that might be acceptable, that to me changes the entire approach, and that's too narrow of I think an instruction for me to be able to support.
As I read it, it's something that's probative to an allocation issue that is something other than just speculation, is something to take a look at. Do you read it that way?
We'll,
to the extent there's anything like that, and
Provide in a lot more detail than we did in the report, and we normally do in a report, what our theory was behind each one of the disbursements that are allocated. Now, obviously, if we get the overhead, that'll just be a pool of things and say include the following. And, you know, that's that. For the rest of it, whatever information we have, we'll try to describe in a lot more detail so that...
And the way I understand it, we're not bound by how we're going to shake out, how we're going to resolve the issue, but we'll just have more to go on.
I think we're willing to just take a look at what, the way Joe just described it. It's not what we originally intended, but it's clear that some commissioners aren't comfortable with what we originally intended. What we're trying to do is maybe get more than two votes. So we're still trying, and we'll see what audit comes back with. And just to be very honest, if it's the same thing that we already got with just a little bit more explanation, I'm almost certain to not approve it. So we could end up right where we are, but we're hoping that we might get an extra vote or two, and we'll see.
And as a point of clarification, can they ask for the affidavit?
I think at this point, based on what the vice chairman said in our thinking on this is at the final end. It's not that we're opposed to it or we think it's a bad tactic. But in this case, at the end of the process, the issue's been raised, and I just don't think it...
Might get you an extra vote at the end of the day. I understand that it might not make a difference to you.
Might?
No, it will, depending on what it says.
That's
what we don't
know. No,
if they said yes... If it said yes... campaign out of here all the time...
Yes, that would
that
be a problem.
That might have to get us some votes the other way.
That would be a problem.
Well, there was no hedging before.
No, if they say that they didn't do any federal activity out of this office, I guarantee you my vote. Now, wouldn't you like to have my vote?
I would. I absolutely would.
Well, we can't go downhill. So let's figure that wherever we go, we'll come out with a more meaningful decision. Are we ready for a vote as modified? But Commissioner Peterson is modified by Commissioner Hinn, is modified by Commissioner Weintraub and Commissioner Barrelly, and explained by the staff director. All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? I think that's going to be it. Mr. Staff Director, are there any additional management or administrative matters to discuss?
No, sir, there are not.
Okay, the meeting is adjourned.
Thank you.